How the Wolf Was Bound, adapted by Anna McCallop. It seems strange that anyone who might have lived with the gods in their beautiful city of Asgard, and have shared in their joys and their good works, should have preferred to associate with the ugly, wicked giants. But that was the case with Loki, Red Loki as he was called because of his red hair. He was handsome like a god. He was wise and clever like a god, more clever than any of the other gods. In one way, however, he differed from the others. He had a bad heart and liked much better to use his cleverness in getting gods and men into trouble than in making them happy. Besides this, he was very proud and could not bear to submit even to Odin, the king of the gods. "Who is Odin?" he muttered, "that he should be set over me? Is he more clever than I am? Is he more handsome, with his one eye and his gray beard?" And Loki held his handsome head high. Proud as he was, however, he was not too proud to do a disgraceful thing. He went off to the home of the giants and married the ugliest and fiercest of all the giantesses. Just why he did it does not seem very clear, for he certainly could not have loved her. Perhaps he did it just to spite the other gods and to show them that he cared nothing for what they thought. But he must have repented of his act when he saw the children which the giantess bore him, for they were certainly the most hideous and frightful children that were ever born into the world. The daughter Hela was the least awful, but even she was by no means a person one would care to meet. She was half white and half blue, and she had such gloomy, angry eyes that anyone who looked at her sank into unconquerable sadness and finally into death. But the other two... One was a huge, glistening, scaly serpent with a mouth that dripped poison and glaring, beady eyes, and the other was a white-fanged, red-eyed wolf. These two monsters grew so rapidly that the king of the gods, looking down from his throne in the heavens, was struck with fear. "The gods themselves will not be safe if those monsters are allowed to go unchecked," he said. "Down there in the home of the giants, they will be taught to hate the gods, and at the rate they're growing, they'll soon be strong enough to shake our very palaces." He sent, therefore, the strongest of his sons to fetch the children of Loki before him. Well was it for those gathered about Odin's throne that they were gods and goddesses, else would the eyes of Hela have sent them to their death. Upon her, Odin looked more in pity than in anger. She was not all bad. "You, Hela," he said, "although it is not safe to allow you to remain above ground, where you may do great harm to men, are not all wicked. Honor, therefore, shall be yours and ease, but happiness shall be far from you. I shall make you queen over the regions of the dead, that kingdom which is as large as 9 worlds. Then it was believed that the only honorable form of death was death in battle, and the bravest of the heroes who died in battle were brought by Odin's messengers, the Valkyries, who always hovered on their cloud horses above battlefields to the great palace of Valhalla. Therefore only the cowards or the weak who died in their beds went to the underground realm, and Hela knew that they were not subjects of whom she could be proud. Nevertheless, she went without a word. Odin then, without speaking, suddenly stooped and seized in his strong arms the wriggling, slippery serpent. Over the wall of the city he threw it, and the gods watched it as it fell down, 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 until at last it sank from sight into the sea. This was by no means the last of the serpent, however. Under the water it grew and grew until it was so large that it formed a girdle about the whole earth and could hold its tail in its mouth. The question as to what should be done with the great wolf, Fenris, was not so easily answered. It seemed to all the gods that he had grown larger and fiercer in the brief time he had stood before them, and none of them dared touch him. At length, someone whispered, "Let us kill him," and the wolf turned and showed his teeth at the speaker. For as he was the son of Loki, he could understand and speak the language of the gods. "That cannot be," said Odin. "Have we not sworn that the streets of our city shall never be stained with blood? Let us leave the matter until another time." So the wolf was permitted to roam about Asgard, and the gods all tried to be kind to him, for they thought that by their kindness they might tame him. However, he grew stronger and stronger and more vicious, until only Tyr, the bravest of all the gods, dared go near him to give him food. One day, as the gods sat in their council hall, they heard the wolf howling through the streets. "How long," said Odin, "is our city to be made hideous by such noises? We must bind Fenris the wolf." Silence followed his words, for all knew what a serious thing it was that Odin proposed. Fenris must be bound, that was true, but who would dare attempt the task? And what chain could ever hold him? At length, Thor arose, and all sighed with relief, for if anyone could bind the wolf, it was Thor. "I will make a chain," he said, "stronger than ever chain was before, and then we shall find some way to fasten it upon him." Thor strode to his smithy and heaped his fire high. All night he worked at his anvil. Whenever any of the gods awakened, they could hear the clank, clank, clank of his great hammer, and could see from their windows the sparks from his smithy shining through the gloom. In the morning the chain was finished, and all wondered at its strength. Then Thor called to the huge wolf and said, "Fenris, you are stronger than any of the gods. We cannot break this chain, but for you it will be mere child's play. Let yourself be bound with it, that we may see how great your strength really is." Now the wolf knew his might better than any of them did, and he suffered himself to be bound fast. Then he arose, stretched himself as if he were just waking from a nap, and calmly walked off, leaving the fragments of the chain on the ground. The amazed gods looked at each other with fright in their eyes. What could they do? "I will make a stronger chain," said Thor, undiscouraged, and again he went to his smithy, where he worked all day and all night. "This is the strongest chain that can ever be made," he said, when he presented it to the gods. "If this will not hold him, nothing can." Calling the wolf, they flattered him and praised his strength, and finally persuaded him to let himself be bound with this chain, just for a joke. You may be sure, however, that they said nothing about its being the strongest chain that could ever be made. Fenris pretended to lie helpless for a time. Then he struggled to his feet, shook his mighty limbs, tossed his hideous head, and the chain snapped and fell into 100 pieces. Then indeed there was consternation among the gods. But Odin, the all-wise, had a sudden helpful thought. Calling his swiftest messenger, he said, "Go to the dwarves in their underground smithy. Tell them to forge for us a chain which cannot be broken. And do you make all haste, for the wolf grows stronger each moment." Off hastened the messenger, and in less time than it takes to tell it, he was with the dwarves, giving them the message from Odin. The little men bustled about here and there, gathering up the materials of which the chain was to be made. And when these were all collected and piled in a heap, you might have looked and looked, and you would have seen nothing. For this extraordinary chain was made of such things as the roots of mountains, the sound of a cat's footsteps, a woman's beard, the spittle of birds, and the voice of fishes. When it was finished, the messenger hurried back to Asgard and displayed it proudly to the anxious gods. It was as fine and soft as a silken string, but the gods knew the workmanship of the dwarfs and had no fear. "It will be easy," they said, "to persuade Fenris to let himself be bound with this." But they were mistaken. The wolf looked at the soft, shining cord suspiciously and said, "If that is what it looks to be, I shall gain no honor from breaking it. If it has been made by magic, I shall never free myself." "But we will free you," cried the gods. "This is but a game to test your strength." "Not you," growled the wolf. "I've lived here long enough to know that if I don't look out for myself, no one else will look out for me." "All right, if you are afraid," said Thor with a shrug of his shoulders. And the wolf replied, "To show that I am no more cowardly than the gods, I will suffer myself to be bound if one of you will put his hand into my mouth." To refuse to do this was, as the gods knew, to admit that they had meant trickery, and thus to make Fenris hate them worse than ever. But what one of them was willing to sacrifice his hand? Thor was no coward, but he knew that he was the chief defender of the gods, and he could not let himself be maimed. However, they did not have to wait long, for Tyr came forward and thrust his hand into the wolf's mouth. The wolf, his suspicions quieted, let himself be wrapped and bound with the cord, and then, as he had done with the other chains, he stretched himself, or tried to. For the magic rope but drew tighter and tighter for all his struggling, until it cut into his very skin. Enraged, he brought his great teeth sharply together and bit off Tyr's hand at the wrist. Then he howled and snapped and growled until the gods, unwilling to have their peace disturbed, thrust a sword into his mouth so that the hilt rested upon his lower jaw and the point pierced the roof of his mouth. They next fastened the cord to a rock and left the wolf to writhe and struggle and shake the earth. So they were freed for a time from their enemy, but at the cost of Tyr's hand. The end.